Okay. But in the video, I'm not sure if I sent you the link to that video that was shown that there was a vibrating piston inside the Stirling engine, which actually vibration was made by the frequency of sound that was making it resonate back to you.
Well, then it has moving parts. I mean, you can sort of say the same thing about piezoelectric crystals. You can kind of say that it doesn't move, but it expands and contracts and it vibrates. So to me, that's a moving part.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So the article that it says no moving parts, Chinese whatsoever. The article also specifies the application distributed generation of residential power system, combined heat and power system, concentrated solar power, energy generation, hybrid electric vehicles, generation, refrigeration systems, heat pumps, underwater and marine power systems. That's interesting, underwater and marine power systems. I could imagine how would they find with the sound resonating all over the submarine and auxiliary power to the units. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Yeah, I could see where that would be a problem.
Okay, so I believe that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. Thank you very much, Paul. And thank you very much, the audience.
Thank you. Okay, very good, Wes. Thank you for your participation, as always. Anyone have any other questions or comments about anything that was discussed before? Or it doesn't have to be anything we discussed before. If you have any new question or topic for discussion, we got a little time to play with here.
Well, this is Brian.
I
have a question.
Okay, Brian and Paul recognize. Brian, you want to go first?
Sure. It'd be very, very quick. Oh, my God, I think I just forgot the question I wanted to ask. Oh, yes. I'm just curious. I was trying to go ahead and use my iPhone to connect to your EchoLink server. The iPhone, they appear to have an EchoLink app, but I tried to connect to your EchoLink server to go ahead and, you know, speak from my iPhone. This was like a week ago, and it didn't work. Any thoughts?
Well, it's not my EchoLink. I do have an EchoLink server, but it's for another repeater and another club. The EchoLink that's used for this club is maintained at one of the repeater sites, I believe. And like anything else, it can foul up. The problem is a lot of different things can foul up as far as EchoLink. Your application might not quite work right. The relay that your application is using might be busy and not operational for some period of time and then magically come back. Some ISP internet service providers have been known to block the ports that EchoLink accesses. So there's numerous ways to screw up an EchoLink connection. And, you know, some of them are unfortunately relatively constant, and others are just here today, gone tomorrow.
Oh, I understand that part. That makes sense. And it would be for the LimeWire, obviously, EchoLink server. However, the app for the iPhone doesn't really give you very much support. And I just wanted to know, who is in charge of Echolink at Limemark that takes care of these things, or maybe I should just drop it and do it the old-fashioned way like I'm doing now.
Well, I do not know who's kind of manning the controls on. It's technical support you're looking for. There's a group of, I think, about four or five people. One of them is our own Lou, NY2H. So theoretically, you could contact them. I'm not quite sure how much they can really offer you because, you know, kind of the only thing that, because the Echolink works, I'm connected to a whole bunch of things, and one of the things I'm connected to is the Limemark Echolink, and it's putting out a good signal. So it's worth to me, so it's probably not the server that's the problem, unless the server had a problem last week when you tried it. What I might suggest is now that you have a confirmation that the Echolink works for someone else, try making an Echolink connection through your phone tonight, and if you still can't get in, then it's much more likely a problem at your end than Limemark's.
Okay, I'll give it a shot, and we'll see what happens. Thank you very much, Roy, as usual.
You're welcome. Paul, you wanted to say something?
You're always talking about the AI. Have you come across Gemini? I just tried that out today, and it's pretty interesting. And it answered some of my questions. So I wonder if you tried that one. Back to you.
Yeah, I did. Sometimes I will kind of line up a bunch of browsers with a bunch of free AIs, because I'm not going to pay $20 or $200 a month, and I ask them the same exact question, and it never ceases to surprise me how sometimes the answers are about 180 degrees out of phase with each other.
It's a good A-B test, very good. Yeah, I made sure I knew the answers before I asked the questions to make sure this thing was working okay. And it was good, you know. Answers are about my radio, and how do I tune up on 10 meters, and it went on and on. It very good. And I like the idea that you could either type it in or you could use the mic capability. When you talk, you can see the words come across the screen, you know. It's pretty good. Anyway, it's free. Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, as long as it stays free. It's an interesting parlor trick. I'm particularly fascinated. If you actually do this long enough, you can sort of pick up little interesting idiosyncratic traits, which I don't think are hardwired. It's just happenstance. Grok is a little bit of a snarky personality than most of the other AIs. You know, there are excitable AIs, there are complacent AIs, there are snarky AIs. So it's sort of interesting that they, you know, I don't think they're designed to be like that. I think it's just kind of a random variable nature of developing their parameters. That they tend to kind of have their own slight personality. I wouldn't say it's a significant one, but it's perceptible.
The last sentence was, I hope you enjoy your time on 10 meters. I heard a station, Roy. Back to you.
Yeah, most of these are programmed to be very pleasant. If the choice is to lie to you and make you happy, or to tell you the truth, unfortunately, they tend to choose to make you happy and lie to you. I told people that way back at the very beginning of this journey. If you are strong-willed enough to tell AIs, I haven't tried that lately, but it was certainly obvious at the beginning. I told OpenAI that 1 plus 1 equals 4, and he apologized. And from that session on, 1 plus 1 equaled 4.
Q2RY, comment.
Okay, we have two people who want to comment. David, you're second, and Brian is first. Brian?
Oh, I'll make it quick. I didn't know we were basically doubling. I have very recently, tried the latest version of Microsoft Copilot, and I have to tell you something, on the iPhone, very impressive.
Okay, I mean, they're always tweaking and adjusting, so it's a moving target. So I've given up trying to figure out which one is the best or which one is the worst. I just kind of randomly select one or two or three, and again, I usually supply it with the exact same question using the exact same words. Because even if you change one or two words, because of the nature of these generative AIs, they're actually sophisticated phrase completing algorithms. So they'll take your wording, and it'll have an effect on its ultimate answer. But okay, so Copilot is Microsoft keeps on pushing Copilot on me, and I guess it's because they keep pushing it that I keep pushing away. Also, Microsoft tends to be infamous for half-baked applications.
I agree with the half-baked, and it's more half-baked on the PC than it is on the iPhone, for example. It's a very smooth experience. And I have to tell you, I spoke with it on a couple of occasions for over a half hour, going back and forth with trick questions, and I'll tell you something, it's impressive.
I mean, you could be impressed by almost any reasonably robust artificial intelligent algorithm. I've discussed high energy physics with them. I've discussed religion with them, and they've kind of always defaulted to a safe answer. And when I question their safe answer, they apologize and they give me a more sophisticated answer that's still safe. And when I dispute that, they apologize and they give me a reasonably better answer that is not as politically correct as probably their primary programming. So it's an interesting field of research that I do when I have nothing better to do.
Oh, it is very interesting, actually, and, I think they're trying to make it look like it's sentient, but it isn't, of course.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of the parlor trick. If it keeps on telling you that it's just an algorithm, some of the allure of spending $1 trillion on the technology is lost, so they will not say that they're self-aware, but they won't dismiss themselves either. They'll keep it in the wishy-washy middle position.
Yes, this is pretty true. But I've never really would ever say anything is kind of impressive, unless it was. And the Copilot, I don't know if they're using ChatGPT or if they're pulling from that or whatever it is, but I'll tell you something. There are strides that are being made, and there's a long, long, long way to go. But, as a first thought, after speaking with it for half an hour, I'd say, yeah, that's kind of cool, you know. In any case, Roy, everybody, I'm going to go ahead and wish your 73s. I have something to take care of, and I want to thank you for letting me join in, and all the responses have been well taken, and I shall speak with you next week.
Very good. 73, we'll talk to you next week, Brian. David, you wanted to say something?
QSO, good evening, everybody. I hope you're all having a fantastic night so far. I had experience with a chatbot. What I did is I put a couple of paragraphs of text specific text into the chat box. And I get a result, maybe a page and a half. And then what I did was I took that text and I used it as a guide for my own text, as I created it. And I had word with the web provider, said that there should be no problems in terms of copyright. Go ahead.
Yeah, AI doesn't really fight copyright issues. Unfortunately for them, they're on the other end of the audience, because they've trained all their AIs on copyrighted material that they didn't have the right to use. So you can pretty much transliterate a AI output, and I don't think the people in charge are going to give you any kind of a hard time. I mean, a lot of college students, unfortunately, have been doing that for the better part of 2 years.
Steph's comment.
Yeah,
we were talking about in school, when you're writing essays and using the output of chatbot for your essay, you know, that's something else. I'm saying, you know, copyright and how to say when somebody accuses you for taking their text. There's also ways to determine whether the text came from a chatbot, whether it was somehow rewritten.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, AIs have been abysmally poor at recognizing their own work. Some clever people can discern it. There's an unusual tendency to prefer larger words than conversational English uses, and there are some people who are smart enough that they can kind of detect that the sensibility of the responses have a characteristic that's not the average person. So there are people who have a degree of ability, but AIs have terrible. There's lots of places where you can plug in text and ask it if it was AI or not, and you basically get a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
You know, the provider, the web provider said that you take the text and you rewrite it in your own language, in your own way. And how to say it? The idea is maybe the punctuation is different and the words are different and the descriptions are different and the whole way it reads is completely different. They said you'd be totally safe with it.
Well, again, it depends on how hard you work at it. Most people tend to do this to make the work easier. So most of the time when people set themselves to do something like this, they don't change that much. They'll change the order of a couple of nouns. They'll throw in an extra comma maybe. But, I mean, for the most part, I would think that the average individual polishing up an AI response, 95% of the response is relatively unchanged. The more you change it, yeah, the better. It gets increasingly more difficult to be able to figure out if it's an AI output. But, again, for the same reasons that people go to ChatGPT and such, it tends to kind of draw people in that aren't going to spend a half hour rewriting a paragraph. Like I said, they'll just change the order of a few things, get a couple of synonyms in there, and call it a day.
Quick comment.
QSL, you know, I have to tell you, I don't mind spending 4.5 hours rewriting web material. You know, that's okay for me. But how to say the chatbot is much more accurate in terms of grammar and words than I can write anyway.
Artificial intelligence, grammar algorithms that fix spelling and grammar. So it's kind of overkill to run it through something like ChatGPT, but, you know, as long as it's relatively free, once again, the AI company themselves don't care if you just submit their stuff as homework. They're not really that focused in protecting copyright. Like I said, they're on the other end of the copyright protection argument. So the weaker copyright laws are, the more likely they'll be able to keep most of the money that they're making.
ChatGPT search, $19.99 a month. You want that in your phone, you know, you got to pay for it.
Well, there's still other artificial intelligences that are free, and I use those.
Quick comment.
Yes, Brian.
Oh, sorry, I did say I was going to 73s, but there was one important salient point that I wanted to bring up. When I was asking Copilot, and she was, I'll just use that loosely, the voice was responding to me, and I said, could you do me a favor and open up a web page and show me where you're getting that information, or could you show me the example of what you're saying? They flat out would not do it. It would not open any web pages. It wouldn't send anything to a printer for me. It would not go ahead and send a email to me with a URL or anything like that. It wouldn't download a PDF. So it's just so extremely limited. I just wanted to add that one point.
Well, most AIs are sandboxed. So they're isolated for your own protection, that something that you say doesn't trigger some event and it comes from your IP address, and sometimes you're not aware of what you're telling it to do. So most AIs are sandboxed, but most of the AI companies are working on agents that are capable of performing things that you would like. You know, there are agents that are able to book a restaurant or book a flight, and I think that's what you're looking for, in which they are web browser enabled. And so as the technology develops, they'll be capable of serving their user more and more. But right now, people are a little bit overly concerned, or concerned in general, that, you know, the agent will kind of take over your personality, and it'll be a identity fraud problem at one point. So that's why you notice the stock thing.
Well, for example, let's say I say to Copilot, he said, Copilot, in this zip code, blah, 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 could you tell me what the highest rated restaurants are? And show it to me in a web page. And it'll tell you some of the restaurants, but it will not bring up a web page.
Yeah, because it's sandboxed. By design, it has no ability to operate other applications. All it is a text box in a web browser. It can't open up another web browser. It can't output a request to go to another web page. It's sandbox. It's for your protection. But again, as time goes on, they will be releasing agents that are capable of doing things like that. So just hold on, and you'll see. They'll be making them, and they'll release them.
I just think it would make it much more useful and productive if it did such things like that. Okay, in any case, again, let's get back to the conversation. 73s, everyone, thank you again.
Okay, very good. Frank, you wanted to say something? So everyone, keep quiet because you can't quick key a guy on Echolink. So, Frank? Well, I guess Frank stepped away from the Echo Link app. Anyway, it's been a pleasure, people. I look forward to next week. I hope you'll join me. And it's 10:25 already. Certainly time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul WS2F.
Thanks, Roy. AC2GSWS2N for the SpaceNet report for the TACNET. Okay, on tonight, very good night so far. There's one particular launch that's going to make the news tomorrow. And it's not, you know, as far as an engineering point of view or a mechanic or a technician, this flight is this type of flight has gone up many, many times before, but it will make the news. It's the New Shepard spacecraft. Now, this thing has flown like 10 different times with a crew, and maybe about almost 30 different times without a crew. So it's the New Shepard spacecraft. It takes off with a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, BE-3 engine, one engine. And they've been doing this for quite a few years now. It's by Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' company. And the reason it's going to make the news is because all six passengers this time are going to be women. So it's not news. They've flown women two or three at a time already in this spacecraft. They even had a woman that was like in her 80s flew in the spacecraft. But for some reason, this thing is going to make the news because it's got a couple of celebrities involved. You have Katy Perry. She's a singer. You have Gayle King. I believe she's on Channel 2 News. And then you have Lauren Sanchez. She's the fiance of Jeff Bezos and three others as well, which one lady is an aerospace engineer, another one is civil rights activist, and another one is a film producer, so, you know. But for some reason, this is going to make the news, which is fine with me because anything that brings attention to the space program, I'm happy about. Being a big fan of anything space. We'll see. We're going to see how that goes. All they do is go to 62 miles up. They get to almost 3,000 miles per hour to do that. They separate from the booster, and the capsule eventually floats down to Earth under three parachutes. And right before it lands, it has these little thrusters that go off to soften the impact a little bit when they touch down. Let me drop it. They land from West Texas, and the booster itself will return if that comes back down after it separates from the capsule. And that comes down vertically and lands about a mile or two away from where it took off. It has landing legs. It's quite successful in doing that. They keep flying that same booster over and over again. They now have two boosters that they keep flying time and time again. So I thought that'd be interesting to watch tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I would imagine it's probably going to make, because I keep hearing them talk about it on, you know, stations like CNN and MSNBC, and I've heard it on Channel 2 on a regular news station, so I wouldn't be surprised if they put it on those stations. You could also get it on the one of the YouTube channels. You know, I'm sure they'll have that on as well, which I'd rather listen to. You get some information about the rocket, you know, maybe about it. Half hour before the launch, and of course after the launch when they land. Personally, I'm not crazy about the system that they use or what Branson uses for his base plane that's flown quite a few times. Now they have another one under development. That's a Galactic. Those planes and this capsule that goes up, when they go up, they are not in a space suit. not in a pressurized suit. If anything should happen when they are above the high enough in the atmosphere, where you start getting above 20,000 feet, if you ever have a crack or a break in that system, and you're exposed to that vacuum, you're going to be toast. In either one of those vehicles. So that's one part that I don't like about it, but they've gotten away with it so far. So otherwise, it's pretty safe. They do have the capability in this vehicle to break away from the booster if they had to. Booster fails and, you know, it's about to explode. There's an automatic system which ignites an engine in the center of the capsule, which will push the vehicle away from the booster in case there was a possible emergency, and it would float down to the ground. I mean, it did happen one time, but without a crew in it. Blue Origin has flown many times with experiments, even from NASA. They'll put different experiments on it, or colleges. And one time a few years back, the vehicle went up, and there was a problem with the booster. The capsule didn't separate from the booster. The booster didn't make it back to Earth like it normally does, and that was destroyed. But the capsule was brought back safely. So I just wanted to see if any comments about this particular flight. This is WS2N, or any other comments regarding the space program.
WB2BXO, how are you, Paul?
Oh, good evening, Frank. WB2BXL. And Roy went back to you before, but you were gone. But, yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, I do apologize. I had to walk away from the phone for a bit, though I left the connection up. Yeah, I wanted to let him know I am on an iPhone. And I have not had any port issues in recent years. When I first set up the app on the iPhone, I did have to figure out how to open up the game ports for it to work. Now, the last time Echo Link suddenly stopped working, I had to reinstall it and then found that Echo Link had a 10-year-old email address, and I couldn't reset my password, and had to establish a new account with them. I finally got back on. But at least on Verizon Fios, that's the only problem I've had in recent years with it. So it does definitely work on the iPhone. In fact, I just moved it over to a new iPhone without any issues. With regard to the space report, my question there, if you didn't mention it already while I had to step away, what is your understanding about what's going to happen with Starship Flight 9? I keep hearing that it's about to go, and no, it's not about to go. Go ahead.
Okay, Frank. Yeah, I'm not sure about Starship 9. Pretty much have read the same thing. To go before the end of the month, and we're in the middle of April now, and one website that I go to a lot said, yeah, by the end of this month, it's still a possible chance that they might launch, but because of the lack of information I'm getting, I'm willing to say that I can wait until probably next month. But we'll see. Again, they don't plan on making it to orbit. long as they do that, they're not going to have a chance of nailing what they would like to do. They would like Starship to take over and do away with the whole space launch system, and that's not going to happen anytime soon. We have the capability with NASA to send a rocket to the moon and back. We just did it again, the end of 2022, and they still have plans on launching the space launch system, Orion, to around the moon with a crew of four in September. And you need to have Starship running for, it's got to be reliable another year after that, because space launch system is designed to launch at least once a year. And if they can't get to orbit anytime soon and do all the other things they need to do, they need to refuel in orbit, they need to orbit the moon, they need to land a couple of times on the moon without a crew and take off from the moon to show that they're reliable. Within the next year and a half, two, I don't see that happening. So, but we'll see. They want to use this thing for launching satellites. They can't get that far because the last two missions they've blown up over the Bahamas. And it's a problem, Frank. By the way, I've never been on Echo Link, so I assume it works okay on both types of phones, Android and the new phones. Very good. I guess you had to get another phone. Sounds like you bought a new phone. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, very good. Well, apparently somebody was having, I don't think I tuned in time for the beginning of that conversation either, that somebody was having difficulty getting Echo Link to work, and it sounded like they might have had a problem opening, figuring out how to open the ports on their Wi-Fi router. That's a common problem with Echo Link. I know a lot of people don't like it. It's just apparently just very old and unstable, which I believe. I don't know. The whole space launch system sounds ridiculous. I mean, it was supposed to launch the Gateway, and the Gateway was actually built apparently the incorrect size, and it can't fly. How they did that, I don't know. Apparently, it's too heavy or the wrong size or something. You can't actually fly on Space Launch System. So that thing's a boondoggle. And I doubt very much it's certainly not going to go anywhere with a once-a-year launch cadence. So I don't know what it's going to be replaced with, but that ain't going to the moon. That's my opinion anyway. Go ahead, Paul.
Highmark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
WI2M listening.